I got a little chilly today. And you know it's cold when Jennifer Huffman walks in and says, yeah, I'm a little bit cool today. She said that earlier this morning. I thought, wow, so even polar bears are putting on scarves and mittens. Must be that time of year. But and it is. It's that time of year for us to continue into this season of remembering Christ, and it's always fun to sing carols. I was thinking, and I, this is kind of going to be a theme for the lesson today. I was thinking, I remember when I was, I believe it was fourth grade, I was at Lakeside Elementary School, and we did a Christmas play. Every respectable elementary school has a Christmas play, right? And so we had this Christmas play. I don't remember the name of the play. Frankly, the only thing I remember about the play was that I kind of did it under protest. I was in a little elementary school choir. And the role that I wanted in the play, again, I don't remember what it was. I just know I didn't get it. And so when it came time for the play to come, and they told us what to wear, and we had our little costumes and everything, and there was a couple of songs I sang, and I didn't get a solo. I don't know why I didn't get a solo. But either way, I just didn't like the fact that I didn't get a chance to be the part that I wanted. But I did it anyway, and I, you know, I showed up, and I sang. Later on the next year, when I was in fifth grade, we had another play, and I wasn't so willing to play my part that year. I just decided I didn't want to do it. I didn't like it. I didn't like the fact that I wasn't getting the solos that I thought I deserved. And so the first time Christmas play came along, we would do one every quarter. We do one every season, one in the fall, one for Christmas, and then we'd do a spring one. And so the winter one, I was like, nope, I ain't doing it. I didn't even try. So spring came along. I remember this one like it was yesterday. It was The Jungle Book, right? And I liked the movie The Jungle Book, and I knew all the different characters and their personalities, and I thought, well, probably not going to get Mowgli. But I said, you know I can pull off Baloo or Bagheera or Ka, somebody, you know. All my friends, we were all, you know, auditioning. And I didn't get the role I wanted. And I thought, I know I'm the best singer, though. I know I can pull this up. And I was just like, you know what? No, I don't want to be one of the vultures. So I just quit. I quit the Jungle Book play. Now, I share that story because when we think about plays, you know, Christmas time, and there haven't been nearly as many, obviously, because of COVID-19, but, you know, we always see plays, right? Christmas plays. And you get the manger scene, and sometimes there have been horror stories where people actually wanted live animals in their Christmas plays. And so they want actual goats and sheep, and it sometimes doesn't work out, right? Because the goat's like, nobody told me my script was. I didn't know. So he starts chewing stuff and knocking stuff down and stinking and all kinds of stuff. We think about the role that Jesus played, and we all understand the role that Jesus plays in our salvation. What it is that Jesus had to endure his suffering. We understand that that is necessary, but what I always like to do around this time of year during Christmas is to take a step back and look at the actual role that so many of the people in the Christmas story, the Christmas narrative, the understanding of Jesus being born and brought into the world is so important that we understand that there's a lot of people who played roles and played their part in Jesus being born, and even more so, in order to play that part, they had to be willing to sometimes play a role that maybe they didn't always want to play. I've given the title of the lesson today, Live on Stage. Because, you know, that's one thing you can't do. Once the show starts, can't just get up there and say, hey, I'm just going to riff. I'm just going to do what I want to do. No, you have to, you know, say your lines. You have to sing your part. You have to stay in your role. Stay in your lane. And I want to look at some of the roles, some of the lanes, some of the scripts, some of the parts that different people had to play and how we can learn from that. how we as a church, frankly, can grow from that. When I think of the church, and I'm using church in the, you know, the larger sense, not this particular congregation or group, but when we think about a church, in many ways, the church in this country is on life support. It's struggling. There's a lot of divisions. There's a lot of churches because of COVID-19, because of just divisions and separation that have existed long before the pandemic, but the stress that has come with that, churches, many of them are shutting down. It's not just businesses. It's not just companies out there and that are going bankrupt. There's a lot of churches that are falling apart, and there's a lot that we can learn from the attitude and the character and, frankly, the righteousness of people all surrounding Jesus during his birth that we celebrate at Christmas that we can imitate and hopefully bring the church back. Again, I was talking about these plays, and, you know, that's not a real camel back there. That's actually the little black girl right there. That's not a real camel, in case anybody can't see this when you're streaming and you're looking at this. That's actually two little kids, and they got a little camel suit. You can see their legs, right? I'm looking at the gym shoes. One of them, the one in the back, the camel legs in the back are going to trip because the shoes aren't tied. But you see them, they're playing out the popular depiction of Jesus and Mary and Joseph and, you know, the manger, and there's a star up there. You know, this, I don't know what they're singing, but they're obviously singing, and you see that some of them, they have on ears, right? Little sheep ears and, you know, camel ears, little turban. I like how that turban, it's actually, you can tell it's just a towel that the mom got. I remember at church years ago when I was probably like 4 or 5 years old, we did a church play, and I did get a singing role in that one, so I was happy to participate. But it was interesting. My mom, she had to dress me up similar to this little kid up front here who has the bathing towel on his head. It's always fun, you know. And I was thinking about, you know, these plays and the roles that people play. This one is actually this is a screenshot of a popular Christmas play that Tyler Perry did, Madea Christmas. I'm not a big Tyler Perry and Madea fan, but this was kind of funny. And you think about, again, the roles that we play. Sometimes we may not think of our role in God's church as being very significant. We may not think of it as being very important. We may actually feel like, you know what? It would be better off if I were casted in this part. God, why wouldn't you give me this thing to do? But God ultimately knows, and the question we have to ask ourselves is, do we trust him enough to be willing to play our role in the larger picture, in the big stage play? I want to start by looking in Matthew chapter 1. There's a very important role that, frankly, very little is spoken about, if you really think about it. There's only a handful of places where we see this. Matthew chapter 1, very important person in Jesus' life takes the stage. Starting in verse 18, it says, "This is how the birth of Jesus the Messiah came about. His mother Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, she was found to be pregnant through the Holy Spirit. Because Joseph, her husband, was faithful to the law and yet did not want to expose her to public disgrace, he had in mind to divorce her quietly. But after he had considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, 'Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins.' All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. When Joseph woke up, He did what the angel of the Lord had commanded him and took Mary home as his wife. But he did not consummate their marriage until she gave birth to a son. And he gave him the name Jesus. There's only about four places where we see anything throughout the scriptures in the Gospels that talks about Joseph. His name only comes up a handful of times. And yet, his role in this, while, you know, and I think of certain movies or plays where you see that person, and it starts out and you almost think, wow, this is going to be a really important character, and then all of a sudden they get, like, killed. You know, they get in a car accident, they get shot, and you're thinking, wow, we're only 15 minutes into the movie, and they're dead. Well, you know, but the movie, as it was promoted, you're like, oh, wow, this is going to have this star actor or actress in it, and then they're gone, like, immediately. But that's kind of what happens here with Joseph. Yet what Joseph's role in Jesus' life, what it actually represented was something that was very important that completely outweighs how many times he's mentioned. We see here where in this dream, the angel of the Lord comes to him and he says, Joseph, son of David. Now, if you go back and you look at the genealogy that is written, his father's actual name was not David. But the angel's making a very important point here because he's pointing out you are from the line of David. Now I'm going to use this woman, Mary, who you are betrothed to, who you're supposed to marry, even though you had in mind to quietly, you know, get this thing annulled and move on, because in divorcing her, he says he didn't want to put her to shame. He didn't want to put her up for disgrace. She would ultimately be stoned because what she did or what she would have been considered to have done would have been something that would have been tantamount to adultery, even though this was from the Holy Spirit. And so he said, I want to quietly do this because I don't want to destroy this woman's life. I don't want her to get killed, but I also don't want any party. I don't want to take any part and being with a woman who's having a child that's not mine. And so he actually is trying to do something that is noble. In the very beginning of this, actually, it says that because Joseph, her husband, was faithful to the law and yet did not want to expose her to public disgrace. There are other translations of this where it says, that he was faithful to the law. It says he was a righteous man. And for that very reason, that's why he was chosen. Because of his character, because of his righteousness, because he didn't want to see harm. But yet, because of what Jesus meant, because in order for Jesus to be accepted, he had to be from the line of David, God's telling him, your name has to be attached to him. You have to be his father. You know, you think about the birth certificate. You know, I've seen my birth certificate and I read it. And it has both my parents' name on it. Now, there have been many cases where somebody may have not known exactly because maybe they didn't do a blood test or maybe the woman, maybe she had two different people who she had been partners with. So we don't exactly know who the dad is. Well, here's the thing. We knew that the dad, the actual bloodlines, if you will, was not Joseph. And yet he was willing to accept this. In many ways, he was willing to defer and give up his right to divorce this woman, understanding that this angel was telling him, it is vital, it is of supreme importance that your role in Jesus' life be that you are his father. That he comes from your family, your genealogy, your line. And when we consider this, Joseph gave up something that ultimately was very important to him. Just like many of us, Joseph had plans for his life. Joseph had carefully taken care of himself and he, you know, managed to get his affairs in order so that he could marry and he could have his own family and do these different things. And this was not a part of the plans. This was not a part of the plans to marry some woman and take this child that was not his. And yet, even though that's basically all we really know about how Joseph contributed to Jesus, we also know that Joseph was a carpenter, that he was, in the translation, I don't want to get too much into the words, but that he was a Levite, which fulfilled the prophecy showing that Jesus would also be of that same line. He would be a Levite. The point is, Joseph, by accepting this woman and this child, even though he played a very small, and if you you could take out the few verses that included him in the Bible, and the Bible would still be the same thickness, it would still have everything else. But what Joseph represented, although it seems very small in many ways, was so vital in order to fulfill the ultimate prophecy that so many, like Isaiah and other prophets, told of the coming of Christ. God chooses us to play our role, counting on us to trust him and defer to his judgment. Lots of times we can look at our own lives and think, well, yeah, but this isn't what I expected, and this is not what I signed up for, and this is not what I wanted. We celebrate the idea of Jesus coming, being born, even his crucifixion and death, and then eventually raising from the dead, because this is victory over death. This means that our sins can now be forgiven, washed away. We just took communion. The blood, the fruit of the vine, which represents the blood that he shed, which gives us the ability to be considered sin-free. We see this, but this all comes about, and the reason why Jesus, the rest of the play can go on, the rest of the play can carry on, the rest of the story can be fulfilled, because Joseph was willing to do his part. Even though it's not what he wanted, even though it's not what he planned, even though it's not what he dreamed of. In many ways, this is the difficulty that we can face in our own walk with God. Years and years and years of sacrifice and building and investing, and we just don't get what we think we should have. We just don't get what we deserve. We don't get what we feel like should have been the reasonable expectation and outcome. But when God makes it clear what it is that he wants us to do, do we take the attitude of Joseph? You notice that it connects him being considered a righteous man, a man of faith. It connects that with his what? His obedience and his willingness to obey and follow the law. His willingness to do what he is asked to do. We know nothing else about him other than the fact that he was a carpenter. We know nothing else that he contributed, frankly, to Jesus and him and how he was raised, except for the fact that he was a Jew, he was a carpenter, and he was of the line of David. All of those things were going to be essential. But in many ways, for many people, frankly, Joseph is pretty much an afterthought. Nobody really talks about Joseph until Christmas time, right? Nobody really thinks much about Joseph. You know, people haven't done long studies and background into Joseph because there's really not a whole lot there. He had a bit role. He had a very small part, but it wasn't insignificant. We all can play sometimes what we feel like are bit roles and small parts in the grand picture of God's plan, what he's doing in the church right now. We can feel like, well, my assistance, my participation, my attendance, my contributions may not seem like they're much more than a bit part. But in the grand scheme of things, God has other plans. Sometimes it involves us deferring what our hopes and our dreams and the things that we expect. It requires us to defer those and defer to him. You know, I talked last week about our motivation and what drives us, what actually pushes us towards having more and more faith, being more and more willing to submit and say, not my will, but your will, God. You know, I was talking about how, you know, as parents, we want our children to grow up, and ultimately we do so much because we want to be proud of our children. It's not about what they're necessarily going to give us back, but we want them to excel. We want our children to make us proud. You know, I was thinking about, there's a, Langston Hughes wrote a poem talking about a dream deferred. You know, this is a image that was crafted. I'm not exactly sure when it was, but I often see this when I read the poem. And there was several people have written songs and things about that poem from Langston Hughes, talking about a dream deferred. Now, keep in mind, Langston Hughes was a writer back during the Harlem Renaissance, and we're talking the 1920s and 1930s. And he was referring to the plight of African Americans in this country and how many of the dreams and things that they wanted, they never got to live those things out. Those were those dreams deferred he was talking about. But I want to bring this into a context, because when we think about the church, and like I said, in many ways the church struggles, and it's really critical where the church as a whole is at. Because frankly, church, and we think about prosperity gospel, we think about so many mega churches, and again, I'm not throwing any type of shade at them, but I'm talking about the fact that in many ways, so much of what we have been taught in American Christianity is about blessings and what we're going to receive from God. Almost like, you know, this is connected to last week. We talked about that allowance, if you will. If I do my chores and I'm a good person, I get good grades, then I'm going to get an allowance and I'm going to be rewarded for my behavior. And yet, when we look at the life of Christ, when we look at practically everyone surrounding Christ, it wasn't about getting blessings. It wasn't about being rewarded in the here and now. It wasn't about getting what you want in this life. Everything was deferred for everybody. Mary had plans. Joseph had plans. John the Baptist had plans. Three wise men, all of them had plans. The disciples all had plans. Everybody surrounding the life, the birth, the life, the ministry, even the death. Sometimes we can even look at some of the people who we consider to be villains, you know, the Herods and different ones who ultimately, during the time when Jesus was taken and ultimately crucified, we can look at them and we can forget that many of them didn't want any part of this. They didn't ask for this. And yet, God had a bigger plan that required them to play their part, to defer and deny themselves. We think of the church, and part of what distorts our understanding of what a church is and how we are to be disciples of Christ is that fundamentally we forget that to live like Christ, to take up our cross, is just that. To deny our wants and our wishes and our dreams and the things that we want for ourselves and say, but I know ultimately God has a bigger plan, and that's why he's chosen me to take this role in my walk with God. One more passage I want to look at, Matthew chapter 2. Starting in verse 19, it says, after Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who were trying to take the child's life are dead. So he got up, took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he had heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea, in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, that he would be called a Nazarene. Think about Isaiah. So many of the prophecies, we look back at the prophets and how they prophesied these things. And they said these things were going to come to pass. They knew nothing about this coming Messiah. It didn't even make sense to them in many ways. But they spoke what it was they were instructed to speak. And the only way for these prophets to not be made out to be false prophets and to be liars, and the only way for it to be confirmed that they truly were prophets of God, was for everybody to do their part. We see here another episode where Joseph is instructed. Now, all the people who were coming for Jesus and wanted to have him killed prior to this, we understand the story of the three wise men. They come from this long journey, and they show up with their gifts, and they come across King Herod, and he says, hey, how about this? How about when you find him in Bethlehem, tell me where he is so I can come worship too? Now, Herod obviously had no intention of worshiping. He just wanted to know where to find him. And what did they do? It came to them also. God came to them, and he also instructed them. He said, don't go back the way that you came. Go the other way. So they took a path. They took the long road out of town, so to speak, and they went through Jericho instead of going back through Jerusalem. Then we come to this where they flee, and they go away to Egypt to have safe haven, to be protected. This is all instruction that Joseph had to follow. This is why Joseph was chosen. It wasn't because he was the smartest or the most spiritual or the tallest or the strongest or any of his physical appearances, because none of those had any bearing on Christ at all. It wasn't because of anything except for the fact that he was willing to be obedient to the instructions he was given. We see here it says he went to Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth, so it was fulfilled what was said through the prophets that he would be called a Nazarene. From the three wise men, Mary, we in the interest of time, we didn't read through all of Elizabeth and how God worked in her and brought John the Baptist. He prepared the way. All of the ways in which the prophets and everything they spoke prepared for this moment, the culmination of all these events. All of this was done, the prophets, they didn't know why. What they wanted to see happen, they deferred those things because they knew God had a plan. What we find is that sometimes God's plan, even for us, looks nothing like what we started out in our intentions. Some of you are probably thinking, man, I'm 50 years old, I'm 60 years old, I'm 70 years old. None of this is what I thought it was going to look like when I originally decided I'm going to follow Jesus. And you think, how did I get here? You almost think, like Joseph's probably thinking, how did I get here? I'm married to a woman, I can't sleep with her, and got this baby now, and I'm just taking God's word for it, How did I get here? This wasn't a part of the plan. I am in Nazareth. I'm not in my home. I'm not around the people where I come from. No, I'm in some strange foreign place. And the only thing I have to hold on to is that I'm doing what God told me to do. Do we have that kind of faith? You think of what it means to defer your hopes and your dreams and your wishes. And yet we live in a society where people, they're not even willing to give up their spot in line at the grocery store. They're not even willing to, I was in Walmart, and I've told my wife this. We had to pick up a few things. It was necessary. And I was like, get me out of here. This was last night. I was like, get me out. It was just a stressful experience. And it wasn't just because, like, I'm afraid I'm going to get COVID-19 or something because it was so crowded. Nobody was respecting social distancing or anything like that, people's masks came off. That wasn't really the point. You know what it was? It was so frustrating because while this is a time at Christmas when we are supposed to be focused on the virtues of Christ and why he came, everybody is thinking about themselves. Nobody's looking to defer. Nobody, you know, it was so great. The one little bright spot in my trip to Walmart last night, I was going there, I'm pushing in the cart, and I'm waiting for this guy, and I waved him on to go ahead in front of me because at this point, I've been stressed. We've been to 3-4 different stores. I'm tired of people. I want to go home. I don't want to see nobody. And he says, no, 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 you go ahead. He saw my hat. He said, you're a Buckeye fan. You guys won today. I'm going to let you go in front of me. I thought, you know what? If that's what it takes. That's what it takes. You know, I'll wear my other Buckeye hat, right? You know, I'm like, O-H. You know, he's like, I-O. Right? It was great. But the thing is, that's so infrequent. But that shouldn't be said about the church. That cannot be said about God's people. We can't be the ones who are unwilling to defer. We can't be the ones where we're saying we represent Christ, but we're unwilling to take up our cross. We've talked about this, how, and I was sharing this earlier today, how COVID-19, frankly, has been less about the actual pandemic and the disease and the vaccine, as much as it, for me, it has been people showing their true hearts. Are you willing to defer? Are you willing to talk to your brother? Are you willing to speak and deal with matters? Or are you retreating to your own separate corners? Where would the story of Jesus ended? Would it have ended in victory over the grave? Would it ended in the stone being removed and Jesus coming back? If it depended on you to be like Joseph, if it depended on you to be like Mary, if it depended on you to follow the instructions and take this months-long journey like the three wise men from some foreign land to follow through, what if it depended on you to follow the Holy Spirit and listen and say, well, you know what? Yeah, but, you know, I'm going to go back and talk to Herod anyway because I don't want any trouble with Herod. I don't want any, you know, these were men from foreign countries, and they're like, I don't want any problems. I'm going back to Syria, and I don't want to have to deal with this. If it depended on you to trust God and defer what it is that you want, the life that you had planned, because if you're listening today, you still have time. You know, it doesn't say that Joseph just, you know, in that moment, just instantaneously was cool with all of this. It doesn't say that, well, you know, John the Baptist, fine. I'm going to prepare the way, and I'm going to do this, and I'm okay with this. No, he had some trouble with it. He wrestled with it. Are we willing to wrestle with our role and ultimately come to the conclusion that my role, my part, even if it's not the role that I want to play, it matters because somebody else's salvation is dependent on it. Somebody's salvation was dependent on Joseph taking this woman and marrying her and not divorcing her. All of ours was. Somebody's salvation, somebody's understanding, someone's faith depends on you taking up your cross. Are you willing to do it? A person's faith is ultimately measured by their willingness to defer their dreams for God's plan. God's plan. Do we truly want to understand God's plan? We were talking about this in Sunday school about how God and his nature and his character, it really, you know, the Bible tells us in Romans, it's not that it's difficult to understand. What ultimately is difficult for us is that we just don't want to submit. What happens if Joseph doesn't submit? We celebrate Christmas, we give gifts. We take some time. We'll probably, you know, hopefully just let certain things be at peace that day during this time. It's a time where we reset, we recalibrate, we refocus. Some of us get a bonus. Some of us are not the Grinch and we're nicer. me. We think about what the story of Christ and his birth actually means. Even when you look at Christ and how we sometimes forget, Christ did not want to die. He did not want to endure the pain. Mary sitting there at the cross, watching her firstborn, watching her son, this son that was given to her. She's been asked to carry and give birth to this man who is going to be the Messiah, and now she is watching his life bleed out of him. So much of what we think of when we think about being Christians, we have this idea where that can't be God's plan. This can't be the role that he wants me to play. And yet, that's exactly the role God gives us. Well, why does it always feel like it's just a constant sacrifice? I never seem to get ahead. I never seem to get what I want. Because actually, this is what God wants me. How could God say that he loves me and he wants me to endure these things? But the story of Christ, the story of his birth, the story of practically everyone around him is that very thing. Are we willing to defer our own wants and dreams and wishes in order for God's plans to be fulfilled? A few questions I want to end with here. Does my faith reflect a willingness to play any role in God's big production, or only the part that sufficiently blesses me? You know, I talked about the idea of playing a role in blessings, and I was just talking about Mary. You think, man, that's such an honor, right? Hey, Mary, guess what? You're the lucky winner. You get to carry God's baby to term, and then a few decades later, you're going to sit there and watch him die for the sins of the world. This is the honor, Mary, the honor of your life. You get to be the chosen one to have to go through the ridicule and the questions and the suspicions of how it is you got pregnant in the first place and you're a virgin. You get to have to flee the country and hide and run away because somebody wants to kill your son. And after all of that, preserving his life and teaching him and bringing him up the right way, the best way you know how, seeing him heal people, hearing of his miracles, you get to sit there at the foot of the cross and watch him be crucified. How can that be considered a blessing? What's so important is that we understand our faith is reflected in our willingness to play our part, even if it isn't about what we consider to be blessing to us. Sometimes God's blessings don't take the form of gifts under a tree and money. Sometimes the blessing is in the fact that we were chosen. Are we grateful for the fact that we've been chosen? Second one, do I have unfailing trust in God, or have I been fighting in my walk with him because of unmet expectations? I think in an honest moment, we can all relate to this in some way. We see here Joseph is told what to do. He's given these instructions. The wise men, they're given instructions. Everybody was given instructions directly from God. Sometimes we can doubt God. We can not trust him sufficiently. We can wonder. We can have suspicions. And it's not because God's message wasn't clear to us, but we're fighting it because we have expectations that go unmet. We feel like we deserve something better or something different or something more or something that doesn't resemble this or look like this. This is not what I've been told from the pulpit my whole life. This is not what I've been reading. This is not my understanding of it. And it's not because God hasn't made it clear to you now, but we're fighting against unmet expectations for our life. The world tells you that you're a failure, or that you should never allow that thing to happen, or you should go about this a different way. being mocked, being ridiculed, being told that you don't measure up because you're following and obeying God's instructions. Do we have that unfailing trust in God that says, I'm not going to be deterred. I'm not going to be dissuaded. I'm not going to be distracted. I'm going to keep on walking with Him, even though the expectations that I once had, that people have set for me, the disappointment that people have in me, I'm not going to let that stop me from playing my part, even if it means I may not get to those expectations. Third, how long am I willing to wait on God to consummate my hopes and dreams? Am I willing to defer the glory that I could have in my life for the ultimate glory of eternity with Him? You know, that word consummate, you know, this can seem like it's just a very simple kind of matter-of-fact thing. There's not a whole lot of attention. The spotlight really isn't focused on that thing. But it's a big deal that you save up all your money and you plan your life out and you get everything invested in the right way and you've constructed this life that you anticipate for you and your wife, and then God says, hey, I want you to marry this woman and she's pregnant, and this is, you're doing this for me, Joseph. Oh, by the way, and you cannot consummate this marriage until after this baby is born. He's waiting and waiting and waiting. He's delaying and he's deferring the things that he wants, the things that are rightfully his according to the law. So much of what we think of, what is our right? I have a right to this thing. We live in a country where you don't have to go very far. You don't have to talk to too many people before you will hear people talk about, well, this is my right. That's what was so disturbing about my shopping experience yesterday. Because it didn't have to be that complicated. You know, people fighting in the parking lot. No, really. There were fights in the parking lot. Because my right, I was here for, this is my right. I deserve this. I should have this. There was a story of somebody being shot and killed over a gift. This wasn't in Delaware. It's okay. You can go out, I think. But somebody being shot and killed in the middle of a store. It started with a fist fight and hair pulling and all this kind of stuff. And it ended with somebody being shot and killed over the last toy. And you think about that, and it's like, it's not. It's just not worth it. It's just not worth it. And we know that, but when we think about us as Christians, us as followers of Christ living in His example, how much are we actually willing to wait on? To say, you know what? It's not that important. I can wait. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine about this, how, you know, we have these rules and expectations where it's like, okay, so child comes up, they go to kindergarten at 5, and then they graduate from high school at 18 years old, and then they go to college, and then they come out 4 years later, and they have a degree, and then they go work, and then they save money, and they pay off it. And we have all of these things, these expectations. So much of depression, so much of just the dismay and hurt and pain that people feel. And they're like, I just don't understand it. Well, it's because of these expectations that have nothing to do with God. Who told you that you had to have this at this time, at this age? Who told you that you had to be in this place in your walk with God at this time? Well, I just don't feel like they're growing sufficiently spiritual. I just don't feel like they're really a man or a woman of God in the way they need to be. How much are we willing to wait? You know, I put it that way because sometimes we're not willing to wait on other people. We're just not willing to, like Joseph waited on Mary for God to be finished doing what he had to be doing with Mary. How willing are we to wait on our brother and sister to get there? Or do we feel like they need to understand, they need to get there now. They need to figure it out now. I'm just not willing to be patient with their growth as though it is for me to determine. How much are we willing to wait on God so that the hopes and dreams that He has the ultimate prophecy can be fulfilled in some small way in our own lives. And finally, in an honest moment, are my plans that I have set out for myself bigger than the plans that God has offered me? I say in an honest moment because everybody knows the correct answer to that. No, what God has determined is that ultimately what's most important. We know that's the right answer, but how do we live? You know, I asked that question a few minutes ago. How would the story of Jesus actually ended if it depended on us in an honest moment to trust God's plans and be willing to defer what it is that we want? We look around our society, and it's so sad that people who claim that they are willing to carry the cross and follow Jesus and be just like him aren't even willing to give up a cart, not even willing to give up a toy. How can we reflect the example that we see in all of the people surrounding Jesus and his birth? How are we as Christians going to display their willingness to put God's plans, to put his expectations above our own?